V'dong Pirkei Avot, we're up to the third chapter, the seventh Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ish Bartota Omer. Rabbi Elazar, the leader of the city of Bartota, he says the following, Tin lo mishelo, give Hashem, for you're giving him of his. Shata v'shelcha shelo, because whatever you're giving him, you and all you own are really his. Chen medavid Omer, and that's what it says about King David in Chronicles, in Divrei Hayamim, Ki mimecha hakol, umiyadecha natanu lach. Everything we have comes from you, and so to speak, we're taking from your hand to give you. That's what King David said. The end of the Mishnah, we'll learn Bezrat Shem next week. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Yaakov says, Hamalech baderech v'shoneh, if someone's traveling. And as he's traveling, he is reviewing his Mishnayot. Umafsik mi mishnato, and he pauses, he stops reviewing his mishnah veomer, and he declares, Manae ilanze, how beautiful is that tree? Manae nirze, how beautiful is that plowed field? Malela vakatuv kilu mitchayev benafsho. So then the verse considers it as though he is responsible for his own loss of life. So we'll see. Okay, we'll have to understand what that mishnah is talking about. So let's start again with Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbi Elazar ish Bartota omer ten lo mishelo. Rabbi Elazar, the leader, the important man of the city Bartota, says, "Give Hashem of his own." Ze medaber ben linyan gufo shel adam. This Mishnah is talking both with regards to man's body, ben linyan mamono, and with regards to one's money. Velomar shelo imna adam et atzmo velo et mamono mechefzei shamayim. He's telling us that a person should not withhold himself or his money from doing the will of Hashem. V'zeu she'amar, and that's what the Mishnah says, she'ata v'shelcha shelo, you and all you own are his. She'encha noten mishelcha, you aren't giving your own, lo migufa v'lo mimamoncha, you're not really giving of your own body or your own money, ela mishel makom baruchu she'akol shelo, you are giving, in fact, from Hashem's, because it's really all his. The money a person has is really entrusted in his hands by Hashem. It's not his. He was given the responsibility to watch over it. The only difference is that here Hashem says, I'm entrusting you with this money and you could use it for what you need. But the remnants, you're responsible to give where Hashem wants you to give. A person should be happy. You were given responsibility to watch over this money, and you're allowed to enjoy it while you're watching over it. You could take care of yourself with what you're watching over. You're only responsible to do the will of the real owner with the remnant. Mashal melech, this is similar to a king, shenatan l'avdo elef zuz. He gives his servant 1,000 coins. V'amar lo tolata ha'mea la'atzmecha. He tells him, 100 take for yourself. V'ten ha'tshamot l'tisha b'nei adam. And the other 900 you give someone else, other people. V'alo samachu. Won't the servant be happy? I think the Mishnah is giving us further insight. The first level of understanding is we have difficulty parting with our money or parting with our time or parting with our convenience because we feel like we don't have to. We feel like it's mine. Why should I do that? A person is tempted to cheat on his taxes because he feels like it's my money. Why should I give it to the government? And that's the first level, I think, of teaching in this Mishnah, that you want to overcome that hardship. So remember, it's not yours. But there's a second level. I have a friend who once heard me say in class how we don't have to trust every person that asks us for a donation. That's a halacha. It's not my own invention. It's a Gemara. It's Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Tzedakah. A person walks over to you and says, I need to marry off a daughter, or I don't have money to pay for medical bills, or I can't cover my electric costs. You don't have to give him because you don't know if it's true. You don't know who he is. So I mentioned in class that there are plenty of people out there who are dishonest, and a person would do well to invest his charity, his tzedakah money, where he knows where it's going. His primary tzedakah money should go there. So at the end of class, one of my friends accompanied me to the office, and this was at a time when a close relative of mine was undergoing treatment, and I was very uptight over this relative of mine, and so I had a lot of heartburn. So I was taking Tums. So he walks into the office, and he sees me taking Tums. And he says to me, a young man at your age is taking Tums? You have such heartburn? He said, that's because of what you just taught. That's because you're so uptight. You're not trusting people. You have to give more. So I said, okay, you know, if someone wants to give me Musar, I could hear that. He pulls out his wallet, takes out 200 shekel, and says, here. I said, what's that? He said, next time you see a poor person, you give him and you don't think about it. And I want you to give every poor person you can see on the street. So my first thought was, I don't need your money. But then I said to myself, wait a second. Technically, halachically, am I allowed to say no? He's asking me to give this money to the poor. Obviously, he's not going to give it because the circles I go in, he doesn't go in. So how can I say no? It's not comfortable. I don't want to take someone else's money. But how can I say no? I'm preventing the poor from getting this money just because I don't feel like distributing it. So I said to myself, okay, I don't think I'm allowed to say no. So I said, okay, fine. I begrudgingly took his 200 shekel. And then a few days later, I davened in bells. About 35 anim came to me and I gave each one a shekel or two shekels. He told me, give each one a minimum of a shekel. Make people happy. Give them the tzedakah. So I said, great, I'm almost done with my duty, yeah? 35, every honey that comes, I give him another shekel, okay? Next I go to the kotel, I finished off another 20 shekel. Natlat, I'm finishing his 200. Next thing I know, 2 weeks later, he walks up to me and puts another 200 shekel in my hand. And this has been going on for years now. And each time I feel like I can't say no. I could show you in my wallet. I have a special slot for his money. It's not. You guys are laughing, but I don't see a way out. And it's so interesting because when it's other people's money, you know, what am I supposed to do? The guy told me, anytime you see someone extends a hand, put money in their hand. Make them happy. You'll be a happier person. They'll be a happier person. Give. So, first of all, he said to me, half jokingly, he said, it'll be a social experiment. Let's see what it does to you. Fine, so I've been his guinea pig. I have to say, it worked. There's something very nice about making people happy. We tend to think, like, this 2 shekel here and 2 shekel there are going to make a huge difference. It doesn't. I see what it's amounted to over the years. How many people would walk into Kofix and buy a cup of coffee for 5 shekel and wouldn't think twice about it? So those 5 shekel add up. If a person does that every day in the week, he's already spent 120 shekel a month. He's already spent, and that's assuming he only buys 6 days a week, right? He's already spent his, he's spent over 1,000 shekel. That's 1,500 shekel a year. What? Right, and I'm saying, and if you buy cake and a coffee, you tell yourself it's only 5 here and 5 there. But we allow ourselves that. So what would be so terrible if we'd allow ourselves to give the poor, even if we don't trust them, a shekel or two? But that's coming back to this Mishnah. That's the second point in the Mishnah. They seem the same, but they're not the same. If we can think of the money as not ours, just like I have no problem when I'm taking his money, I didn't lose anything. The reason it's difficult is because, hey, that's mine, and I'm losing something. I'm not losing anything. And if we could approach it the way the Mishnah says, it's my responsibility. What does it have to do with me? Then we'd approach it differently. I have a friend who he's well-to-do. He says he's middle class. But we were once talking, and he said to me, I own more fridges than you do. I said, what do you mean? He said, I own about 1,300 refrigerators. Because he owns about 1,300 apartments, and in each apartment he has a refrigerator. So he was serious. He's not joking. He owns quite a few buildings around the world. So we were once talking. Someone asked me to ask him for a loan. So I don't like doing that. But he once said to me, he said, I don't mind giving the loan. It's not my money. I tithe my income. It's in a separate bank account. That's not my money. It's God's money. Once I put it in that account, if the person takes a loan and doesn't pay me back, he's not stealing from me. He's stealing from God. That's God's bank account. I happen to be responsible to allocate it. Fine. What difference does it make? But it's not mine. When I make my money, I put away the tithe, and then so I'll give him the loan. But he has to realize that if he's not paying it back, he's not skimping me a penny. This is God's money. He's stealing from God. I'm not sure what he said worked on the lender. But his perspective, it's so much easier to give tzedakah and do what's right when it's not mine. It's not, I'm giving mine, I'm not giving mine. So the Mishnah is helping us have a perspective that makes it easier for us to do mitzvot. Now, it helps to have a separate bank account. It helps when you take your income and you put your tithe away. You don't think about it until you have a use for it. So that helps. But the approach the Mishnah is teaching us makes it much easier and much more pleasant to do the mitzvot with our money, to do the tzedakah with our money. V'chen b'David u'mer, k'mimecha kol miyadcha natanu lach, b'makom acher k'tiv sham miyadcha hi v'lecha kol. V'u ne'mar l'inyan aguf. In another pasuk it says, what I have is from your hand, and so it's all for you. So that's talking about our body. Asher hechinu livnot bet kodesho. L'inyan aguf asher hechinu livnot bet kodesho. So our body was given to us to build a holy home, so to speak, a home for holiness. But when David says, what I've given to you, it's as though I take from your hand to give back to your hand, that's talking about money. You see that from the beginning of the pasuk. We will donate like this because we're taking from your hand to give to you. So that's talking about the money. And it helps when you can look at both that way. When you can look at the strength we have, the time we have, as a responsibility we were given to do something with it, and the money we were given also as a responsibility to do something with it. We don't have to be morbid people, but we should think every so often that at some point we're not going to be here. You know, every time I wear the kittel, I say half jokingly to my wife, worms are going to be eating me in this. But I say it more to myself. You know, I have a stamp in my svarm. Did you guys ever see my stamp? Or even here, I wrote it. Want to read this? What do all my svarms say? Lashem aretz umdoa. And then, Sefer Zeh, this book, Ka'et, is currently Birshut Netanel Frankenthal. That's what it says. And every time I write it, it upsets me, and I do it to upset me. Because I want to keep reminding myself what I don't want to be reminded of, and that is that it's just a temporary thing, that it's in my possession. Sefer ze ka'et birshut Netanel Frankenthal. The ka'et, yeah. This book is currently in my possession. When we write, this is in my possession, we get this feeling, it's mine. And we have to be reminded, it's temporary. I'm temporary. And I have to tell you, every time I write it, it annoys me. Every time I write ka'et, it annoys me, because it reminds me of my mortality. But I know I need that reminder. I know that the fact that it annoys me shows me how I try to ignore it. But you know what? If we would really approach life that way, then when someone asks us for a minute, or someone asks us to borrow a book, or we have many other mitzvot, we would think differently. Part of our hesitation is because we don't like to think about things as being finite. It's mine. Is it mine? No, it happens to be mine for this period. And so if I can view it that way, then I can be more at peace. Parting with it, lending it, being nice with it. When I started learning in yeshiva, so I was nice to the guys in high school. So the guys in high school would come and ask me a million questions in the Beis Medrash. So I once asked one of my rabbeim, I said, am I supposed to stop my learning and answer every question they have? So Rabbi David Feinstein said to me, yes. So I said, it's a lot of time off my learning. So he said a line to me that really bugged me till today. He said to me, you're not the Gra. You're not utilizing every free minute. And I said, well, if you tell me to answer all these high school students, I will never become the Gra. And he said, you're still not the Gra. So take the other time you're wasting and use that for learning. But when people need your time, stop what you're doing and answer them. So that annoyed me till today. He's much older and wiser. But I asked another Rebbe of mine, and he said to me, you're learning Torah to live Torah. The way of Torah is that we're kind people. And when other people ask us for a time, when possible, we give it. So I said, but I don't know if I'm going to accomplish if I take off time from my learning, 20 minutes here and 20 minutes there. I don't know if I'm ever going to accomplish anything. To which he said, maybe in Shemaim it was declared you would live 85 years. And for every 20 minutes that you take off from your learning to answer people, they're adding 20 minutes so that you will make up that time. You're assuming you're losing those 20 minutes of learning time because you're taking the time to talk to people. Who said you're losing? Maybe you're gaining. They're just saying he took that time off of learning the way the Torah expected him to talk to someone. So then we'll give him those 20 minutes at the end to make it up. He shouldn't lose from the 20 minutes he took off of learning. So you can't come with that assumption. I'm losing those 20 minutes, so I shouldn't give them. You learn the way the Torah wants. Part of what the Torah wants is that when someone needs you, you stop your learning and you think you answer them. So the second you think of it that way, I'm not losing anything. Suddenly it's easy to talk to someone for 20 minutes. I'm gaining 20 minutes of life, right? But that's this Mishnah. If I view it as I'm losing something by doing the mitzvah, then it's difficult to perform. If I view it as I'm not losing a thing by doing the mitzvah, then it's easy to perform. Yeah, Yaakov, yes.
It's even easier when you know that you're gaining something.
Okay.
You can lose either, you can be equal, you can gain something.
I'm with you.
It's like when sometimes we hear people saying, oh, I abandoned everything because of this, or, I had a job, I had everything, and I abandoned everything. So in a way, it's beautiful, okay, right? You decided to change your life, but is this the fact that you think that you're still...
I think that that is one of the hidden messages of Megillat Rut. In Megillat Rut, we see Rut and Orpah accompanying Naomi back to Israel. And Naomi tells them, go back! Go back to your mother's house, find a good husband, find peace and tranquility in your life. Life's been tough enough on all of us. I'll be so happy if you each find peace in your life. And they say, no, they're crying, they're going with Naomi, we're with you. And then Naomi tries a second time, and then Orpah leaves. So at that point in the Megillah, if we would hit the pause button and we wouldn't move forward, we would say, Orpah went back to the lap of luxury, Orpah went back to her father's palace. Orpah led a comfortable life, and Ruth went on to live a life of poverty, went on to lead a life of difficulty. She was the stranger in Israel. She was looked down upon. She didn't even know if anyone would marry her, even after she gets married. Years later, her grandson David is scoffed, even after Shmuel anoints him. So Naval is called Chalibi. What does it mean, Chalibi? That means that Naval used to say, I am a descendant of Kalev. David, he's a descendant of Ruth, the Moabite. Even if he was anointed by Shmuel, there's no way he's going to be king. I'm the one that's fit to be king. What a knave. David, he's a slave. Who's he? Then so it says, Naval used to, Rashi and Divrei Hayomim, right? So that's what it means, that Naval was Chalibi. He kept holding up the flag. I'm a descendant of Kalev, and who's he, this David? That's how we would think. We would look at the Megillah and say, Ruth took the difficult course of life, and she'll pay the price for it. And Orpah took the easy course, the comfortable course, the natural course, the pleasant course, the logical course for life. Along come Chazal and tell us the story played itself out differently. They tell us that Orpah went back home, and the Moabites said, "Begone with you, we don't want to have anything to do with you." And she had it so tough going back to Moab that she went to Philistine territory to become a woman of ill repute, ultimately to become a witch, ultimately to mother Goliath and his wonderful brothers. She also lived a long life. Orpah lived to see David kill her son Goliath. She lived to try and personally kill David. There's a whole story about how David and Yoav were attacked by one of her other sons who was a giant, and they tried to kill him, and then she tried to kill him. So Orpah also lived a long life. But remember that juncture. They're standing on the road. They have no shoes on their feet. They haven't eaten in 2 days. They're very hungry, and she and Ruth are both faced with the question, do I go back to the lap of luxury? I have a palace waiting for me. That's the temptation. Very often you're saying, people say, look at what I've given up for to make Aliyah. Maybe. It's tempting to think that way. Very tempting to think that way.
It's also tempting to go back.
And it's tempting to go back. Yeah, it's always tempting. I'm shocked. I'm married. Baruch Hashem, I have children. I have a responsibility to Kehillah. And I have a responsibility to Machon Meir. And every time I visit the United States, I'm tempted not to come back. Blows my mind. I'm there and I say to myself, am I crazy? What's wrong with me? But it's so comfortable. It's how I grew up. It's the bed I'm used to. It's the shower I'm used to. You know what? I know the system. I know the cars. I tell my brother every time. I see the mailman car. I grew up with that. That seems normal to me. I come to Israel. Nothing here is how I grew up. It's all strange. And it blows my mind. I was there 6 months ago, 4 months ago. Same thing. Am I crazy? There's a certain nostalgia. There's a certain comfort. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. Every time, I'm so disappointed with myself. It's like, where's your logic? What's going on here? Why is it so comfortable to go back? Why is it so tempting to go back? Why is it that when I'm there, these thoughts creep into my mind? This would be nice to live here. Am I crazy? So you tell yourself, this isn't what I believe in. But your heart says, this is nice. Yeah, I don't know. I'm telling you personally, every time I get there and every time I comment to my father, I say, you know, this is really weird. My father told me this time, every time you're here, you say that. What can I say? I'm just saying that I think that's one of the messages of Megillat Rut. That when we look at how it played itself out, look at what Orpah got. It says she went and slept with 100 men and a dog a very short time after she left Naomi. And Ruth, so she leads a chaste life. She ends up marrying the prince of Israel and mothering the kings of Israel. They were tempted to go back to the old castle. When Ruth leaves, she creates the new castle. And that's I think that goes back to the point we discussed last night, that beautiful message that alumnus of Mechon Meir told me, that a person has to keep reminding himself. My parents, my family, my community, they're all pressuring me to live out their dreams of who I should be. And I have to live out my responsibility of who my children and grandchildren and the future that I have to build. I don't have to be the product of their dreams. I have to be the progenitor of my children and grandchildren and community and Klal Yisrael's future dreams. But again, the Megillah, I think, gives us tremendous insight there. The temptation, and how did it really play itself out? Yeah, Mr. Pace.
With your story of stopping to answer the questions for the high school students, a couple months ago, there was a story of a man who goes to Shema, gets to account for the time he's having.